morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Ladies and gentlemen, day five of the KSFR Spring 2009 fundraiser. And how are things going in the control room and in the pledge room, Jal?
Let me tell you, Mary Charlotte, and good morning, by the way. Things have been electric this morning. We have had a terrific 2 hours. We really have. And people are so excited about the matching challenge. We broke a record this morning. We did a $1,500 challenge in an hour and a few minutes. And I want to thank all those folks. Dottie Hill is one of them. And Amy McKenzie's another who ended the challenge for us with getting us over the top of $1,500. And people are so excited in the 6 to 8 hour that we're going to do another one tomorrow. But that's all about us. How about you? How are you doing?
We are fine. I'm here with the wonderful Denny Cope, who has been a guest on this show before.
Oh, sure.
And welcome, Denny.
Well, thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's a treat to be here.
It's a treat to have you, and it's a treat to be here on public radio. We want to give the phone number because this is our fundraising time. The number is 505-428-1393, 505-428-1393, and you can call and make a pledge to KSFR because that's how we stay on the air. So many people have told me they love listening to KSFR and that they have watched KSFR develop over the last 7-8 years into a really strong, independent local radio station. It was a nice little station before. It was kind of sleepy. It was kind of fragmented, and people walked in off the street and said, hey, I want to do a show on something, and they did. You did.
I did a show.
Did you really?
Yeah, we Creative Connections. My friend Rebecca Steele and I did a show.
That's great.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And that was a wonderful period of this
That's
radio
right.
station.
It was a fun period.
And since then, it's become, I would say, more professional, but no less community-oriented.
I agree. I agree completely. The breadth of the programming on KSFR since when Rebecca and I had our program has increased tenfold, hundredfold.
We are going to hear an interview in just a moment that I recorded a few weeks ago with Laura Vandernoot Lipsky, and it's on trauma stewardship. And I got so much positive feedback from that interview that we decided to run it again and give away copies of her book, which is called Trauma Stewardship. Trauma stewardship is one of those odd titles that doesn't seem to mean anything, or you know, it's, Laura, I don't know why you got that title, but. But it refers to something which is very wonderful and important, namely the fact that people who confront trauma every day in their work, either as caregivers or firefighters or police or emergency room doctors or whatever it is, really need to take care of themselves. And if they don't, there are dire consequences. You have been a lifelong hospice nurse.
I have.
And so this is something that you probably figured out yourself a long time ago.
Well, I've been a nurse for over 40 years, a hospice nurse for over 20. And before I did hospice, I did dialysis for 14 years. And so that was about the time that the term burnout actually was coined.
Right.
And we all, this whole team of people who were day in, day out taking care of people who had one foot in life and one foot in death. We bonded, we took care of them, we socialized together, and I can tell you we burned out together.
Yeah.
We fried because we weren't taking care of ourselves on a larger level. We didn't know to do that.
This is a book, Trauma Stewardship, that helps you learn how to do that. It's also written with so much understanding and grace. It's really a wonderful book. And it can be yours, ladies and gentlemen, for a contribution to KSFR, I believe of $50 or more. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And what we're going to do is we're going to listen to Laura Lipsky for a little while, and then come back. So give a quick call to KSFR, please, to make your contribution to support the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, which brings you interviews like this every day, every weekday of the year, and to support KSFR, which is your community supported public radio station. Listener supported means that listeners support it. So that means give a call, 428-1393, or if you're calling from out of area, 1-877-907-KSFR.
Hey, can I slip in here?
Sorry, 866.
Oh, did you say that again?
I said 866-907-5737. Go ahead, Dal.
You're adorable, but you have a bad memory. I just wanted to slip in here with a thank you from someone who called moments ago in memory of Kip Corneli. And one of the things we are doing is, if you don't want to be acknowledged yourself, you can have someone else acknowledged, your a loved one who is no longer with us, or someone who has made a big difference in your life, or a pet, you know, anything like that. And this is the second thank you for a real big shadow here in Santa Fe, Kip Corneli.
Thank you so much. And what a lovely gesture to do that. And I encourage people to do that. And especially, I mean, as you hear this interview, I think maybe it's a particularly appropriate time to do that. 428-1393. Let's go to Laura Vandernoot Lipsky. I'd like to welcome Laura Vandernoot Lipsky. She is the author of the book Trauma Stewardship, An Everyday Guide to Caring for Self While Caring for Others. And she will be leading a workshop presented by Las Cumbres Community Services Behavioral Health Training Institute and CASAS, Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And that will take place on Monday, March 30th at the La Fonda Hotel. We'll give more information about that at the end of this segment. Welcome, Laura, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
The phrase trauma stewardship in the title of your book refers to the process of caring for people, caring for oneself, those people who've been affected by trauma, in particular people in caregiving professions of one kind or another. In your own life, you started at the age of 18 working in homeless shelters, and you've been doing all sorts of social change work and helping work ever since. Tell us how you first realized that your work was getting to you.
Right. So for me, what happened was I started doing this volunteer work when I was 18 with homelessness and domestic violence, child abuse, and then working with natural disasters and acute trauma of all kinds. And I was somebody who had a lot of passion, a lot of commitment, and I was very, very called to do what I was doing. And I had very few skills on how to reconcile what I was being exposed to. I had very little ability to integrate this trauma that I was witnessing in. And so for me, what I did was I built up a lot of walls around me to try to keep my heart from breaking over and over and kind of be crushed psychically by all of this. And what that looked like for me is I got very arrogant and I became very cocky and very self-righteous. And that was how I, in the short term, protected myself. And over, you know, about 10 years into me doing this work, a lot of people had tried to reflect back to me that maybe I was being impacted by my work and I should take some time off and maybe it was time for a break. But because I was so cocky and arrogant and self-righteous, I couldn't hear any of those people. And this includes clients. So you always know it's very troubling when your clients are like, really, Laura, you should take some time away. Yeah. And you're like, oh no, I'm coming in on the weekends. And so finally what happened was we took a short vacation and we were visiting some of our family who lived in the Caribbean at the time. And we had hiked to the top of these cliffs. And we were standing on the top of these cliffs and it was just us gathered around. And the first thing I thought was how gorgeous it was looking out over the sea. And the second thing I thought was, I wonder how many people have killed themselves by jumping off these cliffs. And I worked at our regional trauma center at the time at Harborview Hospital. And so you just start triaging, you know, you wonder where the helicopter is going to land and is there a level one trauma center in the Caribbean? And you start going through this. And so I said this out loud, absolutely making an assumption that everybody in my family was also wondering how many people had killed themselves by, you know, jumping off the cliffs and where the helicopter would land. And apparently nobody was. So it got very quiet. And it was finally my stepfather-in-law who turned to me and said, are you sure all this trauma work hasn't gotten to you? And that was really the first time I could understand that there are people who can stand on top of cliffs and not think that. And then it just kind of cascaded from there. Then I was like, oh, probably all the people in the grocery store around me are not wondering who's a sexual predator. And there's probably still people who, you know, let their kids sit on Santa Claus's lap. And there's probably people when they date, they don't do background checks on the people they're dating. And so that was really the turning point for me of just understanding how isolated I'd gotten and how all the people I were hanging out with were responding to trauma in a very similar way.
Let's talk about some of the ways you outline these in your book, some of the many responses that people have to exposure to trauma. Some of them, the caregivers' responses, are similar to the responses of the traumatized victims themselves. For example, hypervigilance and diminished creativity and feelings of helplessness and hopelessness. Both the caregivers and the victims have those responses.
Yes, that's right. And what we talk a lot about is it's about the witnessing. And so when we're talking about trauma stewardship, it's both for people, like you said, who are in caregiving professions. It's also for folks who don't necessarily consider themselves in caregiving professions, but that they find themselves, you know, perhaps journalists or law enforcement officers or other, it's anybody who professionally, through their work, it's brought them in touch with folks who are struggling in crisis and trauma, or who are working with animals, or who are working on issues of the planet, so biologists and conservationists, ecologists. And then it's also for people who are in their life exposed to this. So when you think about, you know, if your brother just came home from Iraq, if your mother has early onset Alzheimer's, if you have a child who's got autism, then that is exposure as well. And exactly what you said, we do see a very parallel situation where there's the primary post-traumatic stress that folks will go through when you're primarily involved in it, and then the secondary piece of that for those, either through their work or through how they're living their life, are also exposed to it, that there is a lot of similarities.
All the groups you mentioned make sense. And then there's also everybody else who happens to watch the news. They see what's going on in Gaza, or they see what's going on in their own town, or whatever. That in itself is a kind of exposure to trauma. And I think unless you have decided not to think about it, you are aware of that and can be subject to those same reactions.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm hearing from people in huge numbers when I'm doing the work I do in the communities, where folks are saying, look, it just me tuning in to NPR is enough for me to have all 16 of these trauma exposure response pieces. And then it's people now, think of all the people in fields that we would never think of, the people in the financial industry, the people who are working on home mortgages, all these folks who, you know, they came to their work to do this type of work. They didn't know they were going to be sitting across from families who just have lost their life savings, or sitting across from families who are getting evicted in 3 days. And so we're seeing this in such large scale now.
So let's talk about something. You bring up something that's very interesting and important in the book, which is that some of the institutions that have been put in place to alleviate suffering of one kind or another can actually cause or exacerbate the trauma that they're supposed to be alleviating. The justice system, law enforcement, even hospitals. How does this happen? Let's talk about some examples.
Right. Well, so you can imagine, you know, you can imagine these systems, and let's talk about systems that were set up absolutely to do no harm and to help people. And they, because of the need that it has been there in society, they might, one example, one way this can go is they take on more and more work, and they do it without having the resources to be able to do it well. And so what happens then is that you see this, I was working with a group yesterday that was having this very exact experience, that there is so much increased need now just in Seattle and the Pacific Northwest. So you have organizations who say, we can't, how could we possibly say no to that? We can't say no to these folks. We can't say no to this, that, the other thing. And so they will take that on, but they don't have the increase in resources to provide, to adequately support their workers. And so then what happens in a very short time frame is you have this dynamic where people are trying to do right by their constituents and the people they serve, but they absolutely do not have the resources they need to do it well. And so then that puts everybody in very precarious situations where, before long, because of the unbelievable need and the tremendous scarcity of resources, you know, it doesn't take long for people to start having to put up all these defense mechanisms. So people lose their empathy, they lose their compassion. You might start getting judgmental, you might start comparing people's stories one to the other. And this is a situation that we see over and over. And so it takes a very courageous organization to be able to do work where you can pace yourself and you can commit to sustainability, that you can say there most likely will always be more need than we can fulfill. And if we do not have workers who are able to stay well, who are able to stay healthy, in their integrity, ethical, and harmonious, then we are running the risk every day of actually doing harm, which is not what anybody has ever wanted to do in any of these organizations. But that people get that bumped up against their threshold, that it gets very precarious.
And I think one of the things that your book brings out so well is that when people are in that situation, it's sometimes difficult to see that it's a systemic problem, and they will either blame themselves or blame other people, when really the problem is, if you look at the whole big picture, a problem of resources.
Yes, and what happens for many people is that they come into this work and they're incredibly committed. I mean, you think of folks at Las Cumbres and you think of folks at CASA and these folks who are doing unbelievable work and are so passionate and are so committed, and they share this with their colleagues, you know, around the nation and around the world. And then it can be very hard to maintain perspective and say, you know, working in this emergency room means so much to me. Working with this population means so much to me. But I can't do it in this system that is creating a setup for everyone involved. That takes a lot of perspective to have. And when you're talking about workers who are maxed out, they're exhausted, and with some situations, think of Child Protective Services, where the stakes are so high, these are not workers who have a lot of time to reflect and to pull back and say, you know what, I am not abandoning my clients if I choose to make a change for the benefit of everybody here. And so it gets very hard because you have people who are incredibly overwhelmed, and it's asking a lot for them to keep that perspective of how's the system working. And a lot of systems, I think, feel very paralyzed to make a change. One of the groups I write about in the book, the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project, is a beautiful organization in Seattle, King County, and they work with immigrants and refugees from all over the world. And they had to do a very hard and brave thing where for several months they closed their intake because they realized that they were so in over their heads and that they were not doing, they were starting to do a disservice to people. But that, you can imagine what that was like for the people internally to make that decision that they were going to close their intake for a few months on these cases that are just excruciating. And they got a lot of flack from some people in the community, but they had the vision and they had that deep sense of knowing that they wanted to change how their organization was functioning before, God forbid, a catastrophe happened. And that's what we see a lot organizationally, is organizations will make a radical change, but it's often after a disaster of some kind happens.
We're talking to Laura Vandernoot Lipsky about her book, Trauma Stewardship, An Everyday Guide to Caring for Self While Caring for Others.
And we have someone who took one of the books as a thank you gift this morning, Ariane Mockwood-Yazzie. Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Ariane, thank
Mary
you.
Charlotte, we're sailing along, but we have had sort of a quiet time in the last few minutes, so we do want those phones lighting up.
Sometimes what happens when it's a quiet time is that people get so involved in the interview they forget to call. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the fun drive. If you like what you're hearing, get the book. I have to say, I read a lot of books, and some of them, I might keep them in my library, but I wouldn't necessarily buy them. This is one that's actually really worth having, whether or not you're in the direct caregiving profession, but especially if you do things along those lines. The number is 428-1393 in the 505 area code. Denny, how do you take care of yourself?
Well, I take care of myself by staying connected with people that I love and that are fun to be with. So it's doing things that, you know, last night I went to the Banff Mountain Film Festival. I went to something that was outdoor, you know, extreme, completely unrelated
right.
to being quiet and a caregiver.
Right, right. What about listening to the radio?
Oh, I love, the first thing I do, whether it's my day off or not, is before I'm out of bed, I reach over and turn on KSFR. It is my first movement of the day. And you know, if I'm up early enough, then I get to listen to the BBC and Amy Goodman. And then if I'm up sort of just right in time, I get to listen to you. And if I really sleep in, then I'm still listening to the radio and to all the beautiful music. KSFR is one of the most nurturing parts of my life. Absolutely.
428-1393. You've heard it from the mouth of a long-term caregiver who really has learned to live a balanced life. I think a lot of us are trying to do that. I mean, you know, there are certain people I know called me who can get kind of obsessed with their work and forget to exercise. And you know, walking the dogs makes a big difference.
Big difference.
428-1393, score a copy of Laura Vandernoot Lipsky's book. There also, I'd like to mention, there are still places available in her workshop, which is going to be happening on Monday, and you can call Las Cumbres or CASA, that we're going to give the number at the very end of the show, to find out more about that. Probably very worth doing if you're plagued by those very things, that kind of burnout or near burnout.
Yeah, she's articulated beautifully what caregivers get faced with, and sometimes it's only, and I watch the best caregivers still go into this because they get so involved and they're so caring, and all of a sudden it's like, I'm a crispy critter, I've got to take time off.
A crispy critter. 428-1393 is the number. We're going to go back to the interview now. Please give us a call, make a donation. We've tried to make it easy for you in so many ways. You can do a monthly donation, which is a bank situation. It's an automatic bank withdrawal. I've been doing this for many, many years with organizations that I love and give money to. I've been giving money to public radio since I think I was 23 years old, and it's never too early to start. It's never too late to start. We love it when first-time donors call, and say, you know, I've been listening to this station for a while. I understand what listener-supported means. I'd like to be one of those listeners who supports it. So call 428-1393. We're going to go back now to Laura Lipsky and give us a call. I will be personally happy if you do and very unhappy if you don't. So give a call. That brings me to another question that I wanted to talk to you about, which was, and you talk about this a little bit in the book, which is the advantages and disadvantages of being part of the community that you are trying to help. So an ex-drug offender or an ex-battered woman or a person of color trying to help their own community. There's a lot that's good about that. You understand where people are coming from, but it's also perhaps easier to get triggered. What have you seen in that regard?
So part of what you're talking about is this idea of trauma mastery. And for, you know, one of the kind of, hopefully the clearest way I can describe this is if you think it's, for many individuals, one of the hardest things about trauma is the out of control nature that often comes with trauma. And what humans have done since the beginning of time is we will often recreate situations that are as similar to the traumatic incident as possible, and this time we tell ourselves we're going to have a different outcome. So you can think of one example as somebody who goes mountaineering and they get frostbite and they lose two fingers and they go summit that same mountain a year later on the anniversary of the accident, making sure nobody gets hurt. We also see it come up in relationships a lot. My friend always says she doesn't have friends anymore, she has a caseload. You know, so that experience where you're like, why do I always have these same people in my life who are so challenging? And then we see it a lot with work. So many fields, you have people in high numbers working in those fields who might have chosen that work out of some type of trauma mastery. And what that can mean is that I try not to think of it as bad or good, right, wrong, or anything, but more like the light shadow piece, so, you know, that there can be some benefit to it, and then there's some things to really pay attention to. So some of the benefit of coming into it from trauma mastery, and this can be as specific as, you know, your parent never paid child support, so you're going to become a child support enforcement worker. It can also be more like you were a refugee and you're going to go work for refugee rights. So some of the benefit of that is that you've got people doing this work where it feels like it's in their bone marrow. This is their heart and their soul and their passion, and they know what this smells like and tastes like and feels like, and they bring their A game as frequently as they can. And then the risk of that is that the trauma can get so overwhelming that it can get incapacitating as well, and it can feel, you can feel a sense of desperation that might not be proportional to the situation. So we look at it in terms of that, and then we also look at it in terms of if you're working with folks who are from your particular community. Again, you might be able to bring a lot of insight and a lot of deep knowing to that. And you also, it might be hard too, because if you're living on a reservation and if you're working with your folks on the same reservation, you can imagine what kind of a baseline you have to be able to do that work and not have it take you over.
And so the whole process of having it not take you over is really, I mean, you talk about trauma mastery. If you're conscious of it and if you're working in an organization that supports that, which is what your work is trying to really foster, then a person has a better chance.
Yes, a lot of what we look for is if folks have insight into it, because sometimes, you know, it can take a lot of courage to have some insight into it and realize that, oh, the whole reason I've chosen this career is because I am trying to reconcile what happened with my brother when I was 4 or my auntie when I was 10. So we want folks to have some insight into it and not get into the bad, good, right, wrong thing, but just have insight into that it might be there. And then from there you can navigate, how can I do this in a principled way? How can I do this in an ethical way? And that's certainly what the process I had to go to when I was at Harborview was really recognizing how much of that was me trying somehow to trauma master a lot of what had gone on for me earlier in my life. And I think, you know, once I had the insight, I was able to still do that work with my ethics and with my integrity. But without the insight to it, then you're driven by this much larger force of trying to reconcile trauma. That's a very powerful force in people. And you don't want to do that without a profound understanding of what you're up against.
You write very honestly and eloquently in your book about your own story, losing your mother to cancer at the age of 13. And this, I think the way you put it is something like the reconciling tremendous suffering and tremendous joy and trying to find your way out of the isolation caused by the suffering.
Yes. Yeah. And I think for me, that is so much of the beauty of doing this work around trauma, is this idea of, you know, as far as we know, suffering has been around since the beginning of time, and pain and hardship and trauma might continue to be around for a long time. Is there a way for us to work with this so that we can show up for it and we can be present for it, but that we can not suffer, you know, that we can actually be able to continue to show up in our lives and extend ourselves and have compassion that goes more deeply in ourselves and in others, and we can have our minds that are bigger, and we can have an increased sense of wakefulness and a deeper understanding even while we're fully living our lives. So the idea of being able to gain resource and gain skills and how we contend with whatever comes our way, but that we're able to move from a place of suffering to really being present with whatever arises. And I think there's a tremendous amount of freedom there. And as you know, humans have such capacity when they are not isolated to be able to navigate through trauma.
One very interesting case history in the book was of a woman police officer who was, you know, probably a small minority within her police force. She discovered the work of Thich Nhat Hanh and started sitting in Buddhist meditation. And she noticed that once she started doing that, that not only she changed, but the people around her changed from being exposed to her. And she ended up doing all these mindfulness trainings for police officers and calling them different things so that they wouldn't think it was flaky and things like that. But I was really struck by how her sense of awareness and presence changed those with whom she came into contact.
That's right. Yeah, that's Cherry Maples, and she's an incredible woman. And she went from being a domestic violence worker, became a police officer, and then became the assistant attorney general in Wisconsin, and is a student of Thich Nhat Hanh's. And And I think that's such a testament to what we talk a lot with people about in organizations, because many people in organizations will come to me and say, look, I'm trying to do the best I can here. Like, I started working out, I'm taking my lunch breaks, I'm seeing accounts, I'm really trying to do the best I can, but I work with all these crazy people, like my coworkers. For so many people, it's not the clients that are struggling with, but your coworkers that you work with who can just be so challenging. And so a lot of people are like, my coworkers are making me crazy. And what we talk a lot about is you cannot have your focus on trying to change your coworkers, but do not underestimate the power of, if you can start caring very well for yourself, that will have tremendous repercussions out in ways that we won't even be able to measure. And again, I often use the example of leaders we know, like Thich Nhat Hanh, or you think about the Dalai Lama, or you think about some of these other tremendous leaders. They're not spending a lot of time up in other people's business trying to micromanage, whether or not your boss is doing this, your coworkers are doing this, but they are handling their own business. As Stevie Wonder says, they are managing what they need to manage in their life, and they are dedicated to their practice, and that is why they have countless people following them. And so in hospitals, in schools, in clinics, in environmental organizations where I work, a lot of what I talk about is, let's get you on your path. Let's get you figuring out how you are going to manage your life with this work, or if you're a caretaker in your personal life, and then you can be guaranteed that folks around you will shift and that will have impact on them.
We're talking to Laura Vandernoot Lipsky about her book, Trauma Stewardship. And that book can be yours for a contribution to KSFR at 428-1393 in the area code 505-428-1393.
And Mary Charlotte, I just want to say what this woman is articulating about how to do self-care is right on the target. And it's one of the reasons I listen to your program in particular, is because you've got such a variety of information. I mean, I can tune in and hear things that are fun, like, am I a cat person or a dog person? Well, I happen to be a cat person, darling.
Oh, no.
Yes, you can handle it.
Next week, we're going to be doing that on Wednesday, dogs versus cats, which is better. I'm not saying that you should save your contribution till then, but we are doing that program on Wednesday
next
week.
And that's so fun. And then when you have the vets on once a month and they're talking about care for animals, that's one aspect. And then you can have somebody on who's an international expert, who's excellent. So different parts of me get fed. The part that loves to have fun, the part that loves to think about the world, and everything in between. I mean, it's the variety, and the different parts of me get nurtured, not just one part. Sometimes I listen to the BBC News or some others, and it's all about what's going on and what are the problems in the world. And here I get fed on multiple levels, and I get nurtured.
Well, I appreciate your saying that. Thank you so much, Denny Cope. It is done on purpose, because I personally think that we are all so multidimensional, and that I try to have the show reflect those multiple dimensions of self, of community,
yep,
of the world that we live in. And living in a small, diverse, sort of crazy town like Santa Fe, one has the freedom to not be stuck in a niche. I am just one thing or another thing, which sometimes happens when you live in a big city and you,
yep,
get sort of compartmentalized into your own colleagues or whatever, your own set of interests.
Yeah, the diversity in Santa Fe is within fingers reach, hands reach.
Right.
Whereas it's not all, usually in bigger cities, it's further away. You've got to really go after it.
428-1393 is the number, 428-1393.
I have some thank yous.
Oh, goody.
Charlotte Cook, her third contribution this time around. She is
Charlotte,
just so
you rock.
Special. And she'd especially like to thank you for having such great guests, including Laura Lipsky.
Thank you.
Mary Ellen Gonzalez, Santa Fe Public School Board Member. Mary Ellen, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And Jane Davis, thank you, Jane. Good morning to you. Robert and Ruth Howes. Robert and Ruth Howes,
thank you
very much for calling. Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Keep on doing pretty
keep
well.
Keep ringing those phones. Keep making our volunteers work. We don't want them to slack for even 1 minute. Oh, no.
Not even 1 second.
Not even one. No slacking in the KSFR phone room.
No slacking.
And it's up to the people who donate to keep them busy.
That's right. It's up to you, listeners, to get the phone ringing. We are so delighted when somebody like Charlotte calls three times during the fun drive. And if you want to make another contribution, you've already made one, That would be delightful, delicious, and lovely. But it would also be great for those who have never before donated to KSFR.
And I'd just like to say that we've had a bunch of them this time. I've specifically been asking them to call for the first time and to mention that it's their first time they've donated to KSFR. And I've been reading names off in the morning that I've never heard before. And that is so much fun.
It really is fun. And it shows that our listenership has grown because when we were doing this, I think I started doing on-air fund drives over 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, and it was a much smaller process because we just didn't have the listenership that we have now. Now there's thousands and thousands of people across New Mexico, especially in the Santa Fe area, but extending out from Albuquerque to Taos and in both directions, east and west, who are listening. We're so delighted. Give us a call. If you cannot donate more than, for example, $10 a month, you can call and say, I want to make a bank contribution of $10 a month, and that will then come out of your account on a monthly basis. It's absolutely safe, and it's a wonderful way to give without having to write a larger check. I think 10 is the minimum, but you can obviously donate more than that. Any amount, or if you can only donate $10 this one time, that's great. It is not the quantity. It is the quality of our listeners who say, you know what, I understand that I'm a part of this, and I'm going to participate. 428-1393. 428-1393 is the number, and it was just so delightful when people call and when we have all these thank yous. Please be part of it. 505-428-1393, and we are going to now go back to Laura Lipsky. We'll be back in just a little bit. I think when you talk about the stresses that people have on them, one of the stresses is the unspoken assumption, and perhaps this is a particularly American thing, I'm not really sure, but that bad things only happen to people who deserve them. And I've seen this myself. If you know, if somebody is in prison, it's assumed that they deserve it. Or if something bad happens to you, it's assumed that you deserve it. That's a stress not only on the victim, but on the people who are trying to take care of them and make sense of this crazy world.
That's right. And I think what you're saying is it's incredible how deeply that desire in humans runs to make sense of things that seem out of control. And I think I'm sure there's a lot to be said there as far as the neurophysiology of the brain and just, you know, the human spirit of trying to make sense of things. That's one of the things that happens with trauma is we immediately go to this place of how can I make sense of it? And with what you're saying, that's one of the strategies we do it is you try to say, okay, well, that must have happened because of this. And, you know, I know in my own life, my mom died of a very, very rare form of lung cancer. And she died when I was 13. And I could count on one hand the people who have not said to me when they find out she died of lung cancer, did she smoke? And it's people, it comes out of people's mouths in a way that I know they don't mean that. But when you tell somebody that your mom died of lung cancer and the first thing out of somebody's mouth is, did she smoke? That is a profound human reaction that there's no space in between that incoming information and the impulse you have to make sense of it for yourself. And so with what you're saying, that connects so much to people's work where it really matters. And I think this is part of the systematic oppression piece we talk about. It matters how the society you're working in views the work you do and views the clients you're serving. And so if you think about folks like Child Protective Services, also if you think about folks who I'm sure that Las Cumbres serves and CASA serves, where if they're not favorable in society's eyes, then that is an added level of toll on the work. Because if you told people the work you did and people gave you hugs and they wrote you checks and they came out in huge numbers to volunteer, that really helps you not be as impacted by your work. But for so many workers, you say the work you do and people back slowly away from you or immediately stops the conversation. Or there's the objectifying piece of, oh my God, you know, you're such an angel. I don't know how you do that work. And I was just working with some state workers here in Washington who do child support enforcement, and they were talking about how they absolutely lie whenever they are in social situations, because to say to people that they are child support enforcement workers just creates a nightmare in their personal life when they go out socially. So that whole piece of it does really matter how our society views both the clients you're serving and the type of work you're doing.
One of the responses to trauma exposure, and you have a whole list of them that include addictions, anger and cynicism, fear and guilt and sense of persecution. One of them is inability to embrace complexity. There's this need that people have when they are traumatized or when they're working with trauma victims to have this sense that the world is this way and it's not that way, and to draw things in black and white. And talk about that, because that's something that we see in the larger society too, especially on certain kinds of very moralistic political stances and things like that.
Well, one of the ways that I think about this and that I'm learning more and more about is this idea of the neurophysiology of the brain and how when humans feel threatened, that the part of our brain that gets activated is the brainstem or the reptilian part of our brain. And that's in part what governs your flight, fight, or your freeze response. As opposed to when you are not feeling threatened, when you feel like you can be relaxed and you're not kind of under fire, you're able to operate from your mid-prefrontal cortex where so much more spaciousness happens, where you're able to have the impulse control we were talking about, where something will come into your life and you're able to pause before you react, before words come out of your mouth, before policies get made, before decisions get made, before you act, and think to yourself, is this the most adaptive thing or thing I could say, action I could take, policy I could write? I think what happens for a lot of people, and I'm seeing it happen more and more people are feeling threatened. So more and more people are feeling backed into corners. Again, we're talking about the increasing needs, decreasing resources. So you have a lot more people operating from this fight, flight, freeze place where you're backed into a corner and nothing creative comes out of that. Nothing flexible comes out of that. There's no kind of your shoulders are down and your jaw's relaxed and you're curious. And so when we lose our inability to embrace complexity, part of what we're talking about is we lose our curiosity, we lose our openness, we lose our ability to have somebody present something to us and say, you know what, I never thought about that. Let me see if we could change our school policy to do that, if we could change our social service, you know, rules to do that. Instead, you're just like, no, never, don't think that. You're so young and idealistic. We'll never do that. And so you get that inability to embrace complexity. And then, like you're saying, it comes out, you know, we see it in politics all the time, where it's where you feel unable to sit with the nuances and the complexity in life. And so instead, you just need the right, wrong, good, bad binary. And we relegate everything to those realms. And it just does a total disservice. And it's not the reality of life.
And it's interesting, too, that's something that really can be taught by example both ways. I mean, you have very hateful talk radio and TV that has sort of talking heads of people who are angry and are trying to draw the debate in a very black and white way. And then you have people who are talking on the radio or television in a more nuanced and thoughtful way. And when people are exposed to either one of those or in an organization repeatedly, they start to pick that up.
Yes, that's right. And a lot of what we talk with folks about is when you're doing this work, where do you lose your humility? Where do you lose that deep sense of humility and that ability to say, I don't know, that ability to have, as they talk about in some traditions, a beginner's mind, where things can come up and you can say, wow, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Or when you're working with folks, and even though the decisions they're making, maybe your client's decisions seem so confusing to you, maybe your boss, you feel like you're being driven crazy by your boss or the board of directors or the local political leader, but instead of coming from this judgmental, dogmatic place of binary, instead you can tap into some humility, which is innate to all humans, and be able to say, wow, there must be so much going on that I have no access to, and I can only imagine what must be going on such that they made that decision, or they said that, or they just acted in that way. And I think that's what we look a lot about with workers is, are you still able to connect with that humility? Are you still able to connect with that sense of not knowing, where you have a beginner's mind and you're curious? And you can say, tell me more about that. I'm so curious about how you came to that decision, instead of saying, geez, you're such an idiot. I always knew you were going to be an idiot. I wish I never worked for you.
you talk a lot about the many things that we're talking about right now, the hazards of working with people who have experienced trauma and so on. There are a lot of things that individuals can do, and one of them is just simply practice whatever their daily practice is, mindfulness, meditation, or singing, or dancing. And part of that is really letting go of the idea that that you can't have fun when other people are suffering.
Right. Much of what I invite people to consider is having a daily practice of some kind. And I say daily-ish so that if you don't get to it every day, you don't have one more thing to feel guilty about. But that you are doing something on a very regular basis that allows you to ground yourself. It allows you to get centered. It allows you to kind of pull your scene together. It allows you to detox. It brings in some spaciousness, which is such a contradiction to the hunkering down that happens when we're exposed to trauma. And this daily practice can, as you said, look like anything from cooking mindfully to singing gospel to working out to seeing a counselor to whatever it is for people. But part of the idea with the daily practice is that you're, for that time, you are practicing how to be present. And one of the things that's so important with that is that with everything that the workers who we're talking about cannot do, with all the ways, you know, that the folks at CASA can't rule what happens with their foster parents or the birth families, and the folks at Las Comunidades can't control what their clients are doing, and all the ways that gets so heartbreaking. So with everything that's out of your control, we know that one thing that folks can always do is bring a quality of presence to what they're doing, that they can show up. And for the amount of time that they are interacting, they can be present, they can be compassionate, they can have a vast mind where they can stay curious, they can be engaged, and that can't ever be taken away from individuals. And so we talk a lot with folks about through this daily practice that you're able to literally practice that. You practice getting present, being present, so that when you go out there, you're able to continue that quality of presence. And we know through history that that is what interrupts oppression, and it's what interrupts trauma, is at the very least, if humans are not isolated and they can be surrounded by this quality of presence, that is transformational.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. We appreciate all the time that you're spending with us.
Thank you so much. It's an honor. Thank you so much.
Laura Vandernoot Lipsky is author of the book Trauma Stewardship, An Everyday Guide to Caring for Self While Caring for Others. And she'll be leading a workshop presented by Las Cumbres Community Services Behavioral Health Training Institute and CASA, court-appointed special advocates. And that will take place on Monday, March 30th at the La Fonda Hotel in Santa Fe from 9 to 4. You have to register in advance, and you call Mary at Las Cumbres at 505-955-0410. Extension 106. All right. And you're listening to KSFR. We're in the KSFR Fun Drive. Denny Cope is here with us. It's been nice spending this hour with you.
It's been great, Mary Charlotte. It's been a real treat, and I was honored to be invited to be here.
428-1393 is the number to make your donation.
One of the things that strikes me the most when I'm listening to this program, more than any other interviewer I have heard, when you are interviewing people, whether it's international or local people or Laura Lipsky, they'll go, that is such a good question. over and over, and I'm going like, she is scoring with her questions.
Thank you. It was one of those little gratifying moments of doing this show. But, you know, I am so honored to be doing the show and to be bringing all these amazing people, many of whom come to Santa Fe, like Laura Lipsky. She's here and going to be doing an event on Monday at, I think it's at La Fonda Hotel.
Mm-hmm, it is.
And there are still some places, I just found out, I got an email, people can still sign up if they want to do her workshop, or they can simply read her book by calling us right now.
Another person has claimed her book.
Yay.
Lisa Rollins. Lisa, thank you
Lisa.
Very much.
Yeah,
so
we've got
so much appreciated.
Laura was so nice. I mean, when we did this interview, and then I wrote to her later and said, you know, I want some of my friends to read this book. She goes, oh, well, we can always donate copies. And I said, well, here we go. Let's donate some copies to the radio station. And it's definitely worth the read. 428-1393. How are we doing in the overall fund drive, Dal Dearman? Oh, he's already gone to the next thing, going back to the pledge room where these wonderful people are taking your call. It's just almost time to go, but I would just like to say that it is a delight to bring you this program every day, broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company. So many people come into the baking company and want to meet the guests who've been on the air.
Yep.
And that's a delight as well, and all sorts of connections are made in that way, and people's lives are furthered. And one of the things that's become so clear to me is that the web of interconnection that make our lives worthwhile and that allow us to really fulfill our own needs and wants and destinies comes through communication.
Absolutely. And you and Robert Knott do a wonderful job on Fridays of entertaining us and telling us what's going on out in the community for the weekend.
Yes. Some people like it. Other people complain about the two of us on Fridays. But this is what we have, ladies and gentlemen. And he will be here with us actually tomorrow on the Radio Cafe. And we're going to be rocking it and talking it up and talking about all the many things that are happening over the weekend. Please, if you have not made a donation yet to KSFR, give us a call, 428-1393 in the 505 area code. And if you have made a donation, thank you. Tell your friends. This is the public radio station of Santa Fe. You know, times might get better soon. They might not.
They might not.
And when we have a place like KSFR, where you hear the information about what's going on in the world and in the community, it really becomes a necessity, both in good times and in bad times.
This is definitely one of the ways to nurture ourselves through the hard times, and I think Laura Lipsky talked about that. Anytime we're challenged, find things that can bring balance to our life. So please contribute to this radio program, to this radio station. It is part of what nurtures us in Santa Fe.
It's time to go now. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web right now and all day long, 24/7 at KSFR.org. You can email me personally at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Podcasting means you can put it on your iPod if you have one and if you want, but you can also just go to santafe.radiocafe.org and click on the word listen and play program, whatever, and it will just play on your computer if you have speakers. Thanks to Brian Highhill for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz here on KSFR. Good morning, jazz. 428-1393 is the number, and out of area code 866-907-5737, 866-907-KSFR. We are delighted to bring you this program every day. I am delighted to bring you this program, and we, KSFR, are delighted to bring you this wonderful radio station. Please support it. We need you. We need every listener to be a contributor. 428-1393. Hasta la vista.
Hasta
Denny
la
Cope, thanks again.
My treat.
Ciao.
Real quick, I just want to make an announcement. All three phone lines weren't in use. If you got a busy signal or the message, just call back. 428-1393. Call back in a few minutes. We'd love to take your pledge.